Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Canes fans, I got to tell you about our great new sponsor. Listen, we all love placing a bet here and there, right? But is there anything sweeter than winning a bet when it's against your friends? Against the people you know, you get one up on them? Man, and the thing about it is you can bet with your friends on anything. You can bet with them on the Oscars, on sports, whatever it is. And that's what our new sponsor allows you to do. Let me tell you about Kutt. That's K-U-T-T, Kutt. The Kutt app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform. It's legal in 40-plus states. Kutt has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo or anything like that. Listen, you can bet on anything on Kutt. You want to bet your friend that the two of you are going to have a 40-yard... Wait a minute, that's not something I would ever do. But you could do it on Kutt! That's right. Listen, log on to Kutt right now and use our promo code BELIEVEMIAMI. That's B-L-E-A-V Miami for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code. It's BELIEVEMIAMI. B-L-E-A-V Miami. Do it now. Get on there. Get on to Kutt and bet your friends about anything. It's a blast. Everyone, and welcome back to the Real Ones Canes podcast. I'm the Beast, Brian London. My regular co-host, Brendan O'Doy, decided to take the family away for spring break. I know, it's unacceptable. Spring practice is going on. How dare he enjoy time with the family? Now, instead, I brought on somebody that I love spending Saturdays with during the football season. I love his opinion, I love his writing, I love his takes, I love his tweets, or I guess his exes, or whatever we're calling him these days. He is Cam Underwood. He's the managing editor for State of the U. Cam, thanks for sitting in on today's show. I do need to let the audience know that when Cam signed on today, he called me Brandon. So, that's how we're starting. That's how it's going to start this week, is that evidently you don't know who I am.
Yeah, apparently not. You know, I was caught up looking at the banner underneath and was just staring at Brandon because I am over in his slot over his name, and literally came in and said, "Hey, Brandon," like we haven't known each other for, you know, 15 years or whatever.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
Know, yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so whatever. But yeah, we're going to start it that way. It's going to be fun, obviously. But yeah, we're going to shame Brandon while he's away, playing daddy daycare on vacation and everything. But yeah, good to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
It is always a pleasure to have you. So let's just start here, because I haven't had a chance to talk to you since spring practice started. Obviously, a bunch of changes for this team, most notably at the quarterback position. Just listen, I'm Brandon and I talk about this. I find it hard to dive into spring practice like it's the next coming of FSU week, because it's only March, and especially with another portal window coming up and then the summer and fall camp, like, I don't want to get too crazy, but we do have a new quarterback. So that's important, but just your thoughts as this team is now in spring break, and then we'll finish the back half of spring practice on the other side.
Yeah. So, you know, we had three practices before the break. And the main thing, it starts with the trigger man, you know, quarterback. So we went out and got Reese Poffenbarger from UAlbany, who, you know, like, okay, maybe he's going to compete with Jakari Brown, 3,600 yards, 42 touchdowns at the 1AA level or FCS level. Geez, I just showed my age, 1AA, I hadn't been called that.
Yeah, I know, it's been forever. A while.
But yeah, you know, bringing a guy with experience there. And then, you know, we upgraded in terms of, you know, the name. I mean, we have a Cam starting for the Canes. Like, I mean, that makes me feel happy personally, you know, as the ambassador for all Cams in the world and in the fan base and everything and on the team. But yeah, you bring in Cam Ward from Washington State, and the Reese Poffenbarger, I've said in multiple places, I thought that he raised the floor for what the season could have been. You bring in Cam Ward and you raise the floor further, and then you take off the ceiling. Like, you know, to quote Michael Jordan from years ago, the ceiling is the roof. Like, it could be as high as it wants to be. We can go as far as he takes us. For my money, he's one of the top three returning quarterbacks in the country. Statistically, he's number one in returning quarterbacks in the country at the FBS level. That is not an opinion. That is not, his name is Cam and my name is Cam. Go look at the numbers. Okay. That is an uncontrovertible fact that he is the most productive quarterback returning to college this year. Right. So when you add that kind of playmaker and ability that Miami has been searching for at that key position, that's where everything starts for me. And you've already seen, you know, the cut-ups from practice that they're putting out there of him extending plays, has an incredible arm, you know, has great arm talent, making throws here, there, and everywhere. You know, and I think that that is the main thing I want to see. Oh, apart from every spring practice, I want to see two things. I want to see development of players and no injuries. Boom and boom. You add in a Cam Ward, you see what the potential could be. But in the same way that Miami had to go outside of the program to bring in a wide receiver to teach the wide receivers how to work years ago, that kid's name was KJ Osborne when they brought him in from Buffalo. KJ Osborne, who's still in the league playing for the Vikings, going against my Lions and scoring touchdowns and making plays to this day in the league. And everybody's like, oh, well, he doesn't matter. He mattered because he went about things in a professional way, and that set the bar for how everybody operates. I believe that Cam Ward is doing the, or can do the same thing at the wide, at the quarterback position, so that somebody like a Jakari Brown, who we've known needed multiple mango seasons to get where he needed to go, everybody's saying, hey, he's starting to turn that corner. His accuracy that was scattershot at best, he's starting to dial in. He's starting to put all those athletic gifts that God gave him to good use. And I really think that that's a big thing. So that's my short story long of, yeah, it starts with Cam Ward and everything else flows from there.
Couple of things on the quarterback situation. One, I think you mentioned Cam, right? And you mentioned Jakari. You still got Emery. You got Reese. You mentioned him. You're bringing a big time recruit that's not just big, but also big. And I feel like that room has taken leaps and bounds. And also, I think maybe the deepest quarterback room in the ACC, if not the country.
It's up there.
Yeah, and I'm just, my one apprehension is now it's time to see what Shane Dawson has in store for this offense, mm-hmm. right? Because Shannon there's Dawson. No, Shannon Dawson, sorry, did I say Shane? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Shannon Dawson, it's now time to see what Shannon Dawson has in store for this offense, because there's not an excuse behind center of a guy that can't do it. Agreed?
No, I agree. I also think that in year one, you saw some of the places where that counter or that constraint play or that pivot, that change up could have fit. But he's like, look, I'm a young 19-year-old pitcher. I'm throwing fastballs and I'm trying to locate fastballs with his play calls. I wish that there was a quarterback draw off of that. I wish that you would fake this and then reverse this way, or like, I wish there was another option built off of that. But I think last year was installing the foundation, and now, and that's not necessarily even just for the quarterback, everybody on the field has to know what they're doing. And now with another year down the road, I think that we're able, are going to be able to hit some of those additional plays that are built off of a play thing. And then you can go to some of those special packages, like that jet motion return touchdown that they threw to Jacoby George in the Texas A&M game, and we saw it one other time, right? That was like when you fully build out the offense, that is one play from that formation and from that motion that could beget another play, that could beget another play. So you actually have five, six different plays off that same look with that same motion. Last year it was, no, that's a special play, like one off, and I'm going to call that one off play in a couple of places. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, we're hopefully going to see kind of the seed that was planted grow into more tree of diverse offense as we go into year two with Shannon Dawson.
The other thing that goes into that is the wide receivers. You got Xavier Restrepo coming back, which, you know, as we now know, was basically like Cam Ward wouldn't be here if Xavier Restrepo didn't decide to come back. That was kind of part of what he wanted. Evidently, the jersey number too was involved in that situation. But you bring in a couple of young guys in JoJo and Nykar. And you know, you hope that Jacoby can keep his head on his shoulders, and you have some other young guys there. My point is, you have a pretty great receiver room. You'd like to hopefully get some. What was that?
I don't know about great.
Pretty good.
Yeah, great. I'm not sure.
Okay. I see what you did there. I see what I did. I see what you did. I think we're on the same page. I got it. All right.
Yeah.
I would like to obviously see production out of the tight end because, you know, you kind of need that.
We have those?
They're not just there for blocking, evidently.
Oh.
That's what I hear.
Interesting. Well,
I know. You know that they're going to get the offensive line right. There's some pieces moving around right now, but I think they're going to get it right. Yeah. And the running back situation is really good. So what I'm saying is there seems to be a pretty complete package around Cam Ward for them to be able to be successful on offense.
Absolutely. And with the wide receivers, again, that I think are probably good to potentially very good, I think that Cam Ward can elevate their level of play. And when you see guys like Isaiah Horton, who has switched his number to number two, and, you know, the first day of spring practice, everybody was like, who is that? Did we get a 6'5", 210-pound transfer all of a sudden? No. That's a guy who's been here, who was really committed to the offseason program, reshaped his body, changed his number, and looks like a new guy. Looks like he did back in high school, but, like, bigger, faster, and stronger. And I mean, like, literally bulkier as well. So, yeah, I think that the tools are there around Cam Ward for immediate and pretty high-level success. And if you look at the schedule this year, there's two teams on the schedule that have win totals of 8.5 or higher, that being Louisville and Florida State, who we play back-to-back. No one else on the schedule has a win total projected at 7.5 or higher than 7.5. Guys, if there was ever a season that the schedule lined up, we've lost 5 in a row and 7 out of 9 to North Carolina. We don't see them. You don't see Clemson. You don't see Notre Dame as a crossover. The path is there. It is wide open and therefore the taking. We've said this in other years. It's incumbent upon Miami to make the strides and do the thing and not get in their own way, which we've seen far too often. But yeah, there are plenty of weapons. There's protection the quarterback, Cam Ward there. You got tight ends. Hopefully Elijah Arroyo is healthy and looks like himself again. Riley Williams, the freshman. I was looking for the R name. I was just going through my whole Rolodex there. But he, you know, is going to take hopefully a step forward and things. You got plenty of options at wide receiver. You got some big time talents across the last two or three recruiting classes. You got more running backs than you want to shake a stick at. And they're even talking about maybe bringing in another one. Like, all the pieces are there. The schedule is there. I think that the continuity on the coaching staff is really key. And yeah, this, just like last year for Florida State, was a full send year. Like, they paid the price to bring the guys back, the Jared Verse of the world, and say, hey, that was a year that they went for it. And, you know, we all know what happened with them in the end. This is a year that Miami has to go for it. And I think by getting Cam Ward and hopefully a couple other pieces in the spring transfer window, we're going to go full send. This has to be push all your chips to the middle of the table. We're not going to hold them. We're not going to fold them. It is all in, and you ride with whatever happens, but you have to go all in and you have to achieve it this year.
Did you just quote Kenny Rogers there? Was that a...
Sure did.
All right. Well, the gambler is on the Real Ones Canes podcast, evidently filling in for Brandon, who's off in spring break. Cam Underwood with me, the Beast. It's the Real Ones Canes podcast. Let's look at the other side of the football for a moment. I do have some concerns here at all three levels of the defense, because you have guys that are hurt. You have guys that you lost. You have a couple of positions where you need some more depth, i.e. cornerback. I'm still a little bit worried about linebacker. So I have less confidence about the defense than the offense, though I know that Ruben Hurricane Bain is still there, and he's got his body looking even better. So that does help me a little bit. But should I be wary about the defense at all, or, you know, am I being a little bit scaredy cat here?
I think it's a you need to see it kind of a thing. Like, they let them go and prove it a little bit. In terms of linebacker, they've thrown numbers at the problem and like big athletic dudes at that. And you bring Kiko Maui-Noah back. With him back and Wesley Bissaint starting, I'm really good at linebacker. And the young guys, I think they, you know, the backups, your Popo Aguirre, your Marcellus Pulliams, those are guys who need to take a step forward. Chase Smith, the guy who's been here for multiple years and has battled through injuries, you know, trying to work his way back, a super incredible athlete coming out of high school. I think that we're going to be good at the linebacker position. I'm very comfortable with the starters. The backups have potential, and I think that they can realize that Coach Nicholson is a really great coach there. Defensive line, I would like to see maybe one more defensive tackle to be really comfortable. But in terms of, you know, overall talent, Jared Harrison Hunt coming back for a sixth year is huge at that interior position. You know, along the line, Hurricane Bain is there. You know, I said before last year that Nigel Kelly was going to be the guy who took capital letters, the leap.
I thought so too.
Got injured in the third game, didn't play again.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had Aki Mesidor, second team all ACC the year before. He played four snaps in the opener and he gets injured. So your two starting defensive ends from the opener didn't play basically last year. They're going to be back reminding you, hey, hi, we were big time players and recruits and everything. So adding to that rotation, I think that the defensive line can be okay. Again, from a numbers perspective, I would like to see like a junior, senior, grad transfer defensive tackle, a position where like you just need that man strength, that maturity and, you know, of age to be at the point of attack. The real thing for me is the defensive backfield. It's going to be completely retooled. You know, Daryl Porter is a steady guy. You want Damari Brown to really step up to be the cornerback one that he flashed that potential. But beyond that, you know, Jadeus Richard has, you know, physical abilities, but he needs to clean up some of his technique and things like that. Other guys are just younger. And then at safety, like, you lose both of your starting safeties to the league in Cam Kitchens and James Williams. So, yeah, I know that the Harris kid from Georgia, Jaden Harris, I sent his film to several people as a blind react after he committed, and they were like, yo, so who's this four-star All-American? And I'm like, he's a low three-star from Georgia. And they're like, why? Like, he runs, he hits, he, you know, kind of played corner and safety. You know, in high school, he was the first guy off the bench when, you know, Cam Kitchens had to miss some time and everything. So looking at him, hopefully Markeith Williams takes a step forward, got a couple transfers in, you know, Mish Powell at the kind of nickel safety from the University of Washington, who played, you know, in the playoff last year and everything. So, yeah, you know, got some good players there, but really looking at the secondary as the question mark more than, you know, the front seven in the secondary. And hopefully we'll be able to coach those guys up and get the kind of performance out of them that we need.
Yeah, so when I look at positions that I'm a little bit worried about, I look at who's coaching there and how that's going to develop, help develop talent, help develop new guys, you know. When you lose your two starting safeties, right, those two guys go into the league, and you know, like that sometimes can make me petrified. But then I think, well, you know what? Lance Guidry is the guy that's on top of that position. He's your defensive coordinator. Like, I feel better knowing that Lance Guidry is the guy that's kind of barking out stuff in that room and with that group. That kind of helps me feel better about things when the coordinator is a guy that is coaching that position. I know they brought in Chevis, who worked with Guidry at Marshall. And listen, I have not talked to anyone who's had one negative thing to say about him, but yeah. It's still, you know, I don't know. So it's still, to me, it's still, yeah, like a, you know, like you said, show me. It's still like, I don't know. We'll see how that works. But for all intents and purposes, people seem to be pretty impressed by that hire. I need to see it happen, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, and that makes sense. But I mean, Chevis Jackson was a first team all SEC player in 07, for LSU with plenty of guys. Like, go look up that first team all SEC that year. And he was unanimous consensus, right? You know, he was all American and everything, went to the league. So a la what Mike Rumpf did as a player. You know what I mean? Played for a couple of years, got into coaching and everything, has coached up really strong units at cornerback along with, Lance Guidry. So that pair, Batman and Robin coming back together to work with the secondary. Yeah, the structure is in place for success. However, we need to see that potential turn into performance, especially in the secondary, because that's where the gap between demonstrated performance and the potential of the players in the room currently, that's where the gap is largest, even, more so than linebacker and defensive line.
Here's another thing that sometimes keeps me up at night, and not really keeps me up at night in a worried way, but just in like a, I don't know what's going to happen type of way. Right. Like a thriller situation, which is there's another portal. Don't know who's coming or going. I could probably take some guesses. One might think there might be a quarterback who decides to step out. One might think, maybe there's a running back situation. You don't know, because guys see what's going on during spring. I might get playing time. I might not get playing time. Competition. Listen, we always talk about right at the U. These guys want competition. They want practice to be harder than the game, all that stuff. But in this day and age, some guys aren't built to sit on the bench and wait. And so I kind of think about this next portal window and think about, yep, the roster is going to change again. And change gets me feeling anxious.
Yeah. I mean, but you have to lean into it. It's the ever present nature of college sports. Like, you're always going to be losing guys off of your roster. I mean, like, for one, I'm counting down the days till the return of EA Sports College Football, because I played that incessantly as a child, and will start again. I've already notified my employer. Yes, I will be taking PTO. Do not call me for a couple few days. Probably wrapping that that full weekend there. But when you're looking at that, and like, I was a former high school teacher, right? So in my group, I taught music, I taught choir, in case people don't know. But every year I'm looking, okay, where are my seniors, right? Because I'm going to have to replace tenor section leader, alto section leader, all-state sopranos over here or whatever, right? I'm going to have to replace them from my top group. And it's the same thing with sports. The analogy is pretty direct, right? So at the high school level, the college level, you're always going to be losing people off of the roster. Now, there's this additional method or structure through which you can lose people, but you just kind of have to embrace the ever-present nature of change. Hopefully you're not going to lose somebody who's foundational, and you're always making those connections, building those relationships, and recruiting your own roster. But I just think, if you change your mindset about it and be like, hey, change is ever-present and we're just going to continue to move forward even with that being the case, I think for me that's the way that I've mitigated the fear or anxiety or whatever you want to call it about that, through departures and things, you're going to still get to having a roster of Miami guys that you want to have here, and hopefully through that you're going to build the kind of team that you want to have to compete for and win championships.
It's a good way to look about it. All right, we're gonna take a break. On the other side, I got three topics for you that we need to jump into real quick. I want to talk about what Nick Saban had to say about college football and NIL and all of that stuff. I know you
just rolled my eyes so hard. Yep. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And in my head, I rolled my eyes too. I want to talk about the Miami Hurricanes basketball situation on the men's side. And then I have a surprise topic for you that I want to jump into. So we will do that on the other side. It is the Real Ones Canes podcast. Brandon is on vacation. I've got Cam Underwood. He's a managing editor for the State of the U, which is an outstanding website covering the Canes. So get on that. And we will do it all again on the other side. We'll be back right after this. And we are back on the Real Ones Canes podcast. I'm the Beast, Brian London. You can follow me on all the socials at Miami Radio Beast. Stepping in for Brandon O'Doy this week, who's on vacation with the family for spring break. I guess he's allowed. That would be Cam Underwood. He's a managing editor of State of the U. Go follow them. Go read them. They've got amazing Miami Hurricanes coverage at State of the U. And Cam, we gotta talk about this Miami Hurricanes men's basketball team. After last year's amazing success, going to the Final Four, this year, starting off what I thought was really in a good start and then just collapsing for the better part of the last half of the season in conference play, finishing just 15-17. So disappointing. Listen, there were some injuries. You obviously lost two amazing starters from last year's team, but no one expected this. And if you watch Jim Larrañaga enough, you could tell how frustrated he was. Just what was your take on this season and the program right now?
Yeah, I mean, it really reinforced how incredible Isaiah Wong was as ACC Player of the Year last year. And Jordan Miller, you know, who was the glue guy who could easily give you, 28-8-5 as he could, like a triple-double of, 11 points, 13 boards, 12 assists with some steals and blocks and just doing everything that the team needed in whatever kind of a way. But yeah, it's disappointing to be sure. Like, this team was 15-7 at a point and then lost the last 10, including the ACC tournament game. So, I mean, it is very disappointing to have the results look like this. Yeah, injuries played a part, but also just the team needed someone to step up in the way of Isaiah Wong, and when you're looking at Wooga Poplar, who is an NBA athlete, but he missed time and he wasn't able to really, when we needed a bucket, he doesn't have the one-on-one game to really do that consistently right now. And Nigel Pack can hit the, he can hit a shot as soon as he walks in the gym. He's, in range. He can hit it from anywhere, but he missed time and he was a little inconsistent. And the guy who you're going to look at most who was consistently in the lineup was Norchad Omier, who loved his, junkyard dog, Dennis Rodman type energy and enthusiasm. And like, I'm going to just be tough at 6'5" or 6" and bang down low against, other bigs and everything. But like, there's a limit to his skill, and we needed skilled offensive players. Plus, he would always get in foul trouble. So yeah, it was frustrating for sure. And you're having to rush guys into bigger roles than they would otherwise play. Keyshawn George, who's still growing, the freshman wing, I think has an incredible future. Like, he might even leave to the NBA because he's saying like we signed him at 6'4". He showed up at 6'6". He's like 6'8" now. And he's like, I might keep growing to 6'9" or 6'10". That's a kid who has, all the potential in the world. You might lose him to the NBA draft because of his size and potential and, level of skill right now. But yeah, throughout this season, I would watch the games pretty silently, but, just kind of pop in at the end and do the score recap and everything. But yeah, it's really, really a frustrating season. And the thing for me that really, really cemented that the men's basketball season was going to head in a different and bad direction after, an Elite Eight 2 years ago and a Final Four last year, this team lost at home to Louisville.
Yep.
And that was the first time Louisville had won on the road in more than two calendar years. And Mark Ennis, who, you know, writes for their SB Nation site, you know, State of the U is on SB Nation Network, in case you guys didn't know. So, like, he's, you know, kind of a peer in that way, hosts a Louisville radio show, you know, is a huge, he's an alum, he's a fan and everything like that. And every game he's talking about, you know, the Louisville Cardinals, they don't fight. It's terrible. Kenny Payne, their coach, is doing a disservice to the fans, the alums, these players, the recruits, the name of, like, they wear Louisville on their jerseys, right, and he's disgracing our fine city. And every single game, Mark Ennis would tweet about that. And, like, even as they finally have fired him for the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad season that they had, he will tweet something negative about Louisville, and I'll quote tweet and say, "This team beat Miami at home." That's how bad this season was, because it's, I mean, that was, that's just illustrative as to, you know, when and where and how bad the season went. In terms of the program moving forward, I have full faith in Jim Larrañaga. He's already come out in multiple interviews and things with Field of 68 and all other places saying, like, yeah, he's 74 years old, but he's going to come back. He's going to coach next season. He intends to be here for a while more. And he has the benefit of the doubt in my mind. We have a great recruiting class. We have a borderline a top 10, maybe top 5 player in the country signed already to come in, dynamic two-way scoring guard. So, you know, we're going to have the ability to rebuild moving forward. It'll be interesting to see if Nigel Pack and Norchad Omir return for next year, because they could turn professional and, you know, probably play overseas or whatever. But yeah, in terms of the projection forward, yeah, we do need to retool the roster a little bit, but Larrañaga has proven that he is able to coach the hell out of a basketball team. This year was frustrating for everybody, and hopefully, you know, we get things going in the right direction, but I think we have the guy to do it because he's a master of his craft.
Yeah, listen, I know it's being said out there, but, you know, Jim Larrañaga, like you said, Elite Eight, Final Four, it's not like this was 20 years ago. This was, you know, last year or the year before.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is something that success was way in his past and it just hasn't come. No, it's right there. I do, you know, I guess, you know, my birthday is coming up in May, and if I could get a 7-footer for my birthday, that would be amazing. They don't fall off of trees with the skill set that you might need, but that would be great. But yeah, in Jim Larrañaga, I trust. I think he's earned the right to carry this thing forward until he decides that he's, you know, that he doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, he has the benefit of that doubt. Michael Nwoko, the freshman center, hopefully takes a big step forward next year, but like another one of his body type. You know, he's 6'10 and a half, 6'11, 235. Like, he's more yoked than, like, you remember Tanya Jakiri? He came in as like a 7-foot stick, you know, like, guy, but he ended up putting on decent enough weight where he could be a starting center in the ACC. Michael Nwoko has the body already to be, you know, to bang with, you know, the bigs and everything. But yeah, getting another guy of his size, height, and length. And that's the difference with Norchad Omir, because, like, there's just a difference between 6'5 and 7 foot. They're just, I mean, it's 7 inches. You know what I mean? Like, and he's great at what he does. He's a intuitive rebounder. He's strong as an ox, you know, and everything. And he does really great stuff. But, like, I need another big in the rotation. Not saying that we're going, you know, old school Twin Towers out there all the time. But yeah, I also, my birthday's in August, 2 weeks before the opener when we beat Florida, by the way, to the day, by the way. So nice. I would also like the 7-footer for my birthday for the basketball team as well. So, I mean, hey, if you get one and I get one, and then we have Michael Nwoko, all of a sudden now we got three. Yo, we're cooking with fish grease.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's switch focus for a second. The big national story in college football has been Nick Saban. He was in Washington in a hearing about college football, as the country, as the NCAA, as the entire galaxy tries to figure out how, what to do with college football and NIL and portal and all the stuff that's going on. And Nick Saban, you know, to paraphrase, just says, "Oh, well, you know, the game can't exist like this, where guys are getting paid and they want to play for the money and not for the name on their the front of their jersey." And I'm just like, Nick, not sure if you kept track of the last few of your coaching stops, but there's some allegations out there that maybe allegedly some of the guys you coached maybe got some bags there, coach. Like, really?
You know, really is the thing. If you have not, I urge everyone to go search this article called Meet the Bag Man. Stephen Godfrey, when he was at SB Nation, wrote this long read feature. He's an Ole Miss graduate himself and was embedded with multiple bag men from back in the day, like about how they operate and, you know, funneled money to players in the recruiting game before NIL. This is probably a decade or more ago that he wrote it. It's one of the best pieces that will give you insight into that world. But I'll take it a step further. Like, you know, having been around, you know, blogging and journalism and all these different kind of things, like, I'm not a professional journalist. I'm not. And I make that distinction all the time so that, like, I'm not coming off and misrepresenting myself. But I've talked to plenty of credentialed journalists, of full-time journalists. And one whom I know who, all I will say is they used to work in South Florida. I will not say where they work now or anything else. However, that person and I had a conversation where they showed me text messages proving that, or to the effect that in Alabama at the time, they would do the $40,000 briefcase. What's the $40,000 briefcase? And this is when Nick Saban was already there entrenched as their coach, because this is during the 2010s, right?
Yep.
The $40,000 briefcase was two dudes in suits would drive way out in the middle of Nowheresville and stop at one of those roadside diners that you see from, you know, My Cousin Vinny or whatever. Order a cup of coffee, leave the briefcase with $40,000 to pay for the cup of coffee and leave out, because they knew that the waitress was the cousin of the boyfriend of the sister of the player that they're trying to get that money to, right? I saw the text messages and communication saying, hey, we went to this place to put the briefcase for this player, right? And that was Alabama. I also know for a fact, because this player who went to Florida is a first cousin of a friend of mine I used to work with. He called the University of Florida, right? I know this is not Saban, but same thing. That he called the University of Florida and said, hey, coach, it is when Urban Meyer was there, probably going to decommit, really looking to stay in Miami, probably, you know, whatever, whatever. Coach said, okay, cool, boom. And the cousin was with the other cousin, you know, the player, sitting on the stoop. Not 15 minutes later, a car rolls up, a duffel bag gets dropped in the driveway with Florida Gator gear and $25,000. Dude, the game is the game, and it always has been. But for Nick Saban to now go and say, well, guys are getting paid, da 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 da. And like I said, I, for one, have seen the $40,000 briefcase text messages. Or everybody knows that, like, that was the game, bro. And everybody was doing it. But now, the high operating teams did it and did it well and didn't get caught. But now everybody can do it out in the open. So your hidden advantage is no longer there. Now you want to come down and say, well, we should maybe look into paying players. Nick Saban, like, I was born at night, not last night. You knew what you were doing, brother. Stop the nonsense.
No, we did it all the right way. Everything was perfect, above board. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you also want to see that oceanfront property in Montana that I have to sell you? Because, like, if you believe that, you believe this also.
There's an ocean in Montana?
Man, it's great. It's always subtropical, 80 degrees. You know, it never rains like it's in Southern California. Beachfront access all day. Like, yeah, come on. Just, you know what? Just wire me the money. I'll send you the location later. Because if you believe Nick Saban with that nonsense, right, that was widely industry known. And again, not that I'm singling out Nick Saban, because, like, everybody was doing it, or the high operating teams, they were doing it and doing it well, right? So it was not only him, but Alabama was the big bullies on the block, right? They didn't get all the best players just because. I mean, I know some guys did want to go there and win championships and da da da, but, like, out of just, like, looking at all things being equal, every one of those players from all over the country is just randomly going to choose Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Come on, man. Like, use your brains.
I was going to make a joke about brains in Alabama, but I'll just I won't go there. All right, last topic. I'm going to hit you with a surprise one, and it comes up every Saturday that we sit a couple of seats away from each other at the stadium. The band of the hour. The band of the hour, Cam. Now, people may or may not know that I was in the band of the hour from 94 to 97. I'm a member of Tau Beta Sigma, the National Honorary Marching Band Sorority. Yes, I'm a brother of a sorority. We'll discuss that at a later date. So, I those are my bona fides. But people may not know about Cam because he sent off a tweet or two about the marching band, and there was Facebook groups just going in. I'm like, who is this guy? What does he know about music? And then you come to find out, oh, wait, that's a classically trained music educator right there. That is somebody that has, for years, been teaching the youth of America how to do the music thing. He's got his bona fides. He doesn't need to show you his resume. He knows what he is talking about. It hurts me on Saturdays when I look at the band and hear the band, and it's just, it lets me down times. And I just want my... I just want my marching band. I just want my band of the hour, my alma mater, to show out when it comes time for that pregame or halftime show.
I mean, I think that we all want that. And to the point, like, yeah, there were so many people who were just like, I mean, and I guess credit to me that I've been in the sports blogging space so long that, like, people only know me in that dimension. You know, like, oh, this meathead who played football there. I never played football. I played basketball and baseball. I've been transparent about that as well. Like, oh, this sports idiot or that, like... I have a degree in music education from the University of Miami. I taught music for 15 years and I did summer camps and things like that. So you aggregate that together, more than 20 years. I performed with Grammy Award winners. We recorded award-winning albums in the choir when I was at Miami. Like, I have cultivated multiple artists through my classroom and the teaching that I've done. Like, I have been a performer. Like, I've performed professionally since I was 12, up until recently. Like, I know music inside and out. Like, I speak fluent music. Like, you can put anything in front of me. Like, I can sight read it. Like, music and me have been intimately related since forever. You know what I mean? But yeah, I would just say credit to me, because like, people didn't know that. But like, yeah, when I'm giving a critique of the band, it's not in some kind of random way. And if you looked at the verbiage I was using, that kind of told the story where I'm like, oh, like, you know, this section is, you know, flat, or they're overplaying and they're doing that, and this is why the performance isn't this way. And yeah, I would come to the press box every week and Beast would be like, hey, man, like, yeah, they're talking about you in these Facebook groups. And, he went in there, was just like, oh, you're questioning Cam knowing music, and like, probably knows more than like a couple of you guys put together. Right. So you might want to back up off of that. But it's funny, like my good friend, Joe, who was my roommate my sophomore year, was band captain as a senior. He played fourth bass drum for a couple of years and then he was on the snare line. So he was band president and captain the year that we won the national championship. So he got to, also being from Michigan, like I am, got to march in the Rose Bowl parade, which was like a holy grail of all band kids, you know, growing up from the Midwest, when you would see that. So he got to do that and everything. And we talk about it all the time. Yeah. I want the performance to be better. Like, I mean, I wish that they gave me things that I could not be as negatively critical of in terms of their performance. But you know, unfortunately that's the current state of affairs. And I actually had multiple people, slide in my Facebook DMs when the director announced his retirement, at the end of this upcoming or this current school year. Like, oh my God, you drove that man away from his job, but thank you for telling the truth about the band. I, like Beast, want the music to be great. I want the performance to be great, but that doesn't extend only to music. I want the football team to be great as well. So if I'm critical on that point, that's because I was there from 2000 to 04. We didn't lose a game since second week of my freshman year at Washington until my senior year on Thursday night, or Thursday night at North Carolina, when Connor Barth hit that goddamn field goal. You know what I mean? Like, I hold the team to that standard and I hold the music to that standard, because when I was at the U, the University Chorale was award-winning and got literally flown all over the world because of our performing excellence. So that's what I desire, and that's the standard that I hold the band to. Unfortunately, they have not reached it recently, but with a new director coming in, hope springs eternal. So maybe next year sounds a little bit better.
Possibly. And if they could just bring back North Dade for like just one or two games, just to get me going a little bit. I don't know. Just, you know, I throw weird things out there.
That's one of the fanfares, right?
North Dade is dun.
Okay, yeah. Got it. Yeah.
Dun, anyways, that's why I was a drummer and not using notes. Anyways, my tones are horrible, but the show has not been horrible. It was fun to spend some time with you. I do miss Brandon because even when Tyler Van Dyke is no longer here, he's still all over Tyler Van Dyke. So I did miss that in today's show, just to let you know. But he's off with the family for spring break, but it was nice to have you sit in. I appreciate you taking the time. And it's, you know, it feels like it's football is forever from now, but yeah. It's going to be like in a snap, we're going to be in that press box just yucking it up once again. So, Cam, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, it was always a pleasure, man. You know, appreciate you, Brandon, over there on the microphone. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke from earlier. Go back and rewind the podcast. But glad to be here, man. We'll definitely be catching up at the stadium sooner than we know. Hopefully, we're going to watch lots more, Hurricanes victories throughout this season and reach the level of success that we need. But this podcast has been a success, and I'm glad to have been here with you, my friend. So I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Cam Underwood, managing editor, State of the U. Go check their stuff out. Go subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, all of those places. Until next time, I will see you when I see you. Peace!